The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune, looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned.
If only.
With Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
Uh-huh. If only I had a crystal ball and could tell the future, things would be a whole lot better. Because at least we'd have some ample warning, you know. But as it is, there are certain things we can predict. And hopefully we're wrong about half of them. Right. All right. Welcome to a Tuesday. You know, Gotta Laugh is usually here with us at least every other Tuesday or whenever she can do it. But she's up in Canada now, and where she's been staying, she has no like horrible cell service and no internet access. I mean, it comes in and out, but it's not reliable enough. So she'll come back when, you know, when she's got a steady connection. So we do not have her today. Who we do have is Brian Karam. You know, Brian Karam, White House correspondent, formerly for Playboy. These days, he's writing for Salon.com. He, of course, hosts his own podcast, Just Ask the Question. And he's been doing this thing with Mary Trump, right? So I got to tell you my Mary Trump story, and actually I'm going to pull Brian into this, although I watched a little bit of the show today that he was on, and it seems like he pushes her buttons, but whatever, you know, don't we all? So some months ago, I have no in with Mary Trump, but I really wanted to get her on the show. And so this is what I do. This is the producer side of me. I subscribe to her Substack, so I have a bunch of different emails. None of them are personal emails, but I wrote to her a few times, and then one day, finally, she wrote back, and she said, yes, Nicole, I would love to come on and do your show. Here's my publicist's phone number. Her name is, I think it was Lauren. Call her. She'll set it up, and we'll take it from there. Well, I tried calling this woman. I tried texting this woman. I tried everything possible. I looked up her name to find out what publicity firm she might work for. I tried to find her online so I could get an email address for her. I got a couple. I don't know if any of them are any good. I've tried every which way to get in touch with this woman, and nothing. You know, sometimes I wonder if I'm just invisible. So I still have never heard back from Mary Trump or her person. So, but I'm still trying. Actually, I think Mary Trump and I would be friends. She wrote something in her Substack, and I do subscribe to it, the other day about she mentioned two musical artists who I used to play on the radio back in LA, both obscure, fairly obscure artists, one named Patti Rothberg, who I didn't think anybody else ever heard of. She released one album back in the early 90s, and I actually have an interview with her. And Patti Griffin was the other one that she mentioned, and I also have an interview with her. Patti Griffin has gone on to bigger things, but I did the very first Los Angeles radio interview with her because I fell in love with her first album. This would be a common thing between me and Mary Trump, but I can't get to her to tell her and share these files with her. So maybe Brian Karam can help. We'll see. So somebody else today that I'm not able to get through to. So you know that I live, at least for the time being, in Florida, in Coral Springs. In case you missed it yesterday, we are getting ready to move. And we will most likely be moving to Arizona. The main reason being, we have to go somewhere warm because my husband is a weather wimp. You know, he was born in Minnesota, but a family moved to Florida when he was two. And he can't deal with snow. Go figure, you know. So I'm limited geographically as to where I can go. It's got to be somewhere warm. I'd love to go back to Southern California. It's just too damn expensive. Unless, you know, someone wants to hire me and pay me enough money to live there, I'd be happy to go back. So anyway, we're sort of in flux. The house is on the market. If you know any real estate investors who want a great deal on a house in Coral Springs that they can make some money on in a flip, email me, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. But in the meantime, we're, you know, packing up and getting ready to move. Anyway, I digress. While I still live in Florida, and chances are we will still be here on August 23rd, that's primary day here, right? And my congressman, although we've been redistricted, I think I'm right now in the 22nd district. As of this election year, I'm now in the 23rd district, the newly drawn 23rd district. My congressman, Ted Deutsch, is leaving. He's not running for re-election. He's taken a position at some think tanky thing. So I'm trying to figure out who I'm going to vote for. And there are, I believe, six candidates running. Well, I've invited all of them on the show. And one guy that the leading contender, a guy named Jared Moskowitz, his people just have ignored my overtures. They've ignored my emails and my DMs and all that. And there was another one who was supposed to be on with us right now. This guy named Ben Sorensen. So Ben Sorensen is the vice mayor of Fort Lauderdale currently. And I reached him by direct messaging him on Twitter. And it was a couple of days ago. And he said, I introduced myself. He said, yeah, thank you. I that'd be great. Or there's certain days that look good for you. And I gave him a couple of choices. And he wrote back and he said, great. How about the 19th around 5 p.m.? Would this be virtual? And since then, that was just yesterday morning, I've sent him at least half a dozen messages. Nothing. Radio silence. So I guess he's not interested. It makes my job a little easier to narrow down the candidates this way. But, you know, shame on him. So anyway, we spoke last week with one of the, the most long shot possibility. Nice enough guy, but he's not going to win. And I'm drawing a blank on his name at the moment. Please forgive me. So we were supposed to talk with Ben Sorensen today. That's not happening. Tomorrow, we're going to hear from Hava Holzhauer, who is also looks pretty good. And then I guess on Thursday, we'll hear from Michelangelo Hamilton and from another candidate named Alan Ellison. You see, they are getting back to me. Oh, I see. This is somebody else telling me who to contact for Mary Trump. Gotcha. Okay. Thank you, Jessica. I got your email. I'll do that. And I'll ask Brian too. I mean, I there are times I wonder if I am invisible. Like I send out emails and I don't get an answer, and it's not very good for the ego, you know? But anyway, so that's where we are. And that's why we're not speaking with a candidate right now. and I'm a pushover, so I probably will give Ben Sorensen another chance if he gets back to me, or maybe he's just not interested, which, you know, no skin off of my teeth, as they say. All right, so I've got a bunch of stuff. Brian Karam's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. I figured it's been a while since he's been on the show, and so much has happened since he was last here. First of all, the final week or three of the Supreme Court, I'm sorry, the Extreme Court. And so we've got a lot of catching up to do there. And then the January 6th hearings and all that. So there's never a shortage of things to talk about with Brian Karam. So I look forward to that. As for the rest of the news, I have so many things to choose from that we haven't gotten to. Okay, let me start with this because it is top of mind and it's news. So last night, I'm watching Rachel Maddow, you know, because it's Monday and she does a show on Mondays. But Rachel Maddow is, she's a catastrophizer. I never heard that word before. until many years ago, David said, you're catastrophizing. Okay, I get what it means. Never heard it before, but she did last night. So she was talking about, she got a hold of this memo, this exclusive memo from Merrick Garland about moving forward with investigations because, you know, the Department of Justice does have guidelines about opening or embarking on any investigation of somebody who's running for office within a certain time frame of Election Day. And if you'll remember, think back to Jim Comey, who basically killed Hillary Clinton's, what was left of her campaign, and paved the way for Donald Trump to win when he went to before the microphones and said, you know, we're investigating Hillary Clinton and her emails or whatever stupid thing he said he was doing. That's not kosher when it comes to the DOJ. So anyway, let me play you a little bit of what Rachel Maddow said last night, the memo she read, and then and what preceded it. All right, so Rachel, please do tell.
And then it says this under the heading Statements, the memo. Investigations, yep. And Charging Near an Election.
Quote, okay.
The Department of Justice has a strong interest in the prosecution of election-related crimes, such as those involving federal and state campaign finance laws,
yeah.
Federal patronage laws, corruption of the election process. As department employees, however, we must be particularly sensitive to safeguarding the department's reputation for fairness, neutrality, and nonpartisanship.
Okay.
Simply put, partisan politics must play no role in the decisions of federal investigators or prosecutors regarding any investigations or criminal charges.
Cool,
law
yeah.
Law enforcement officers right. And prosecutors may never select the timing of public statements, attributed or not, meaning on background or not.
Mm-hmm.
Investigative steps, criminal charges, or any other action in any matter or case for the purpose of affecting any election or for the purpose of giving an advantage or disadvantage to any candidate or political party. Such a purpose or the appearance of such a purpose is inconsistent with the department's mission and with the principles of federal prosecution.
Okay.
If you face an issue or the appearance of an issue regarding the timing of statements, investigative steps, charges, or other actions near the time of a primary or general election, contact the Public Integrity Section of the Criminal Division for further guidance.
Okay.
Such consultation is also required at various stages of all criminal matters that focus on violations of federal and state campaign finance laws, federal patronage crimes, and corruption of the election process.
Right. Okay.
And now get this.
And now get
finally,
what? Yeah.
Department employees must also adhere to the additional requirements issued by the Attorney General on February 5th, 2020.
Yeah.
February 5th, 2020.
Yeah.
Governing the opening of criminal and counterintelligence investigations by the department, including its law enforcement agencies, related to politically sensitive individuals and entities.
Okay.
See memorandum of Attorney General William Barr.
Okay. So that raised some red flags with me, too. See the memo from Attorney General William Barr? What? Merrick Garland? This is Merrick Garland's memo to his entire Department of Justice about opening new investigations as we get closer to an election. And then he says, for reference, see the memo from Bill Barr. Well, that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. So, all right. Keep going, Rachel.
Questions regarding the scope or requirements of the February 2020 Attorney General's memorandum
yeah.
should be directed to the Public Integrity Section.
Okay.
Again, this memo from Merrick Garland to the Justice Department, to all Justice Department employees, was sent out about 8 weeks ago in late May. We have just obtained it. We believe this is the first time it's been made public.
Okay.
And in large part, this memo from the Attorney General follows both the letter and the spirit of previous letters from other attorneys general.
Yes,
around
it does.
Election time.
Right.
Basically says, look, we can't look like we're acting to effectuate some particular partisan outcome.
Right.
Around election time, that means we may delay certain steps we would otherwise take
yeah.
in order to avoid even the perception that we are trying to influence election outcomes.
Exactly.
We have seen that kind of guidance before from attorneys general of all stripes. That's fine. That's at least non-controversial. But this last part about Bill Barr's instructions from 2020.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, right?
That's kind of a surprise.
Okay.
February 2020, Trump Attorney General Bill Barr put out new guidance over and above what all attorneys general had previously said. And what Bill Barr said in February 2020 was specifically that, you know, in essence, nobody's allowed to investigate anybody connected to a presidential candidate without his permission. Well,
that's the weird thing. His permission personally?
Barr's memo from February 2020, the language of it specifically, it said, quote, "No investigation, including any preliminary investigation, may be opened or initiated by the department or any of its law enforcement agencies of a declared candidate for president or vice president, a presidential campaign, or a senior presidential staff member or advisor,
right,
absent prior written approval of the attorney general through the deputy attorney general."
Right.
Trump Attorney General Bill Barr established that new rule in February 2020.
Yeah.
No investigating any declared candidate for president or anybody working for that candidate unless I personally give my permission.
Which sounds kind of creepy.
That new rule was established by Bill Barr.
Right.
When he was working for Donald Trump.
Yeah. Okay. But you know what?
Merrick Garland has just formally extended that guidance and told every employee of the Justice Department that it is still in effect.
But it was before. And Rachel has sort of got her hair on fire over this. And I wake up this morning to tweets from listeners saying, "Oh my God, did you hear what Rachel said? This is horrific. This is just horrible. I feel sick." Well, okay. So Doug Jones, you know who Doug Jones is, right? Doug Jones is the former senator from Alabama. He only served, well, part of a term after Jeff Sessions was made attorney general. Yeah. And then he was actually in contention for attorney general under Joe Biden, except he went with Merrick Garland for whatever reason. But anyway, what's his name? Doug Jones put out, no, I can't, here it is. All right. Doug Jones put out a little bit of a, let me calm you down video. Let me play a little bit of it for you, because basically he's saying, don't worry. What Rachel did there was kind of clickbaity.
You may not be able to see me at all.
Oh, okay.
I hope you can.
He doesn't know how to do the video.
I've seen an awful lot of chatter about the May 25th Garland memo that just got leaked.
Yeah.
And I understand people that haven't been in the trenches, they don't. It's easy to maybe misinterpret. Now, I have not seen the entire memo.
Okay.
So I really don't know everything that's in that memo. But what I saw with Rachel Maddow's segment, it is really just a reaffirmation of what has been Justice Department policy for a long, long time.
Hello.
And I think that's important to remember. I know that folks are anxious about the January 6th committee. I know folks are anxious that the Department of Justice seek charges against folks that were in the highest levels of government of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been compelling evidence about that. But this is really, based on what I've seen, is a reaffirmation of what has been the department policy for a long time.
Okay, so calm down. So aren't you happy that, you know, that there won't be another James Comey sidling up to the microphone, torpedoing a presidential campaign and giving someone like Donald Trump an opening that you could drive a Mack truck through? You know, God, stop with the hair on fire stuff. Really, it's unnecessary. There's plenty to freak out about. We don't need to be made uneasy over things that when there's no there, you know? Seriously. You know, I've had a thing with Rachel Maddow for a few years now, and she, when she's good, like the old story says, she's very, very good. But when she's bad, God, I just stop it. Just stop it already. All right. Well, I could go on with other stuff that I have here, but I see our guest has arrived. So, hey, I'm never one to, you know, keep a good man waiting. So Brian Karam, welcome back to the show. Brian Karam, of course, White House correspondent who we came to know when he was writing for Playboy. These days he's writing for Salon.com. He does his own show at Just Ask the Question. He wrote the book, not Eat the Press, Press the Meat. What is it? What's the book called?
Free the Press.
Free the Press. I knew it was something like that.
We're eating something somewhere.
There you go. So Brian Karam, before we get into anything, I got to say, I saw you earlier today on Mary Trump's podcast. I just happened upon it. And I've got a thing. Mary Trump, I've been trying to get her on the show. And she once responded to an email and she gave me the number for a publicist, allegedly, who just ignores me. So and then Mary doesn't answer me. So I think I've been ghosted. But we'd really get along because we have the same musical taste. She wrote something on her Substack the other day about Patty Rothberg and Patty Griffin, who are two artists I used to play on the radio back in Los Angeles.
Wow.
I've got interviews with them that she would love, but I need an intro to her.
I'll pass it along.
Oh, great. I knew you would. Thank you. So, Brian Karam, it's been a while since we've spoken.
It's been a while.
And it seems like the world has fallen apart.
Well, future's so bright, I got to wear shades.
Timbuktu3. Yeah. I know my music. I know my, ancient music.
Yes, you do.
I do.
It's changed quite a bit in the last few months, has it not?
Yes. Oh, my God. First of all, it's no longer the Supreme Court. It's the Extreme Court.
Yes.
What they have done. I mean, first of all, did you ever think that they would really overturn Roe v. Wade? Because I always looked at that was their cash cow, that was their big money raiser, that they would always reach for that brass ring to overturn Roe v. Wade, but they were never actually going to do it. They didn't.
Well, you take a look at the makeup of the Supreme Court and all the problems that we have in the United States with far right extremism, and it boils down to really one thing. This is the Catholic cult. Those six members of the Supreme Court are all conservative Catholic members, Opus Dei. I mean, we're talking extreme far right. This is the American Taliban. And I'm, I was raised in a Catholic family, so forgive me when I say this is crap. This is the worst of the worst. So yeah, I did expect it from them. I knew when they got up, each one of those justices that Trump brought in, when they got up and lied before the Congress about what their intents were, I knew what the intention was. I knew what was going to happen. I don't think anybody who was a sober, wise, and I'm not saying I'm either sober or wise, but those who were sober and wise took a look at it and knew what, what was the handwriting was on the wall. But yeah, it was for years. I mean, I look at it this way. In 2021, women got the right to vote in this country.
Yep.
50 years later, we got Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. 50 years after that, they took back Roe v. Wade.
Right. Next, they take back the right to vote.
After women got the right to vote, what about 1970, 71, instead of getting, Roe v. Wade, they had taken back a women's right to vote.
Yeah.
That's in essence what this Supreme Court did. It threw us backward. And by the way, it is intent on destroying our rights. It's just begun. And at the end of the day, it's part and parcel of what the far right is through the Federalist Society and others have tried to do for the last 50 years. And
right.
We can't let it happen. We can't let it go through. But we sat still and allowed it to happen when we allowed Donald Trump to take over the office of the presidency.
Now, you were there when I was doing my little thing about Rachel, and it's not so much about Rachel, but it's about this memo that Merrick Garland put out reaffirming a position, a policy that's been in place where they don't go public or start a new investigation into somebody running for office so far out from an election. What James Comey did, I think, put the final... Look, Hillary Clinton was the worst candidate ever, maybe next to Donald Trump, but I think Comey's trips up to the microphone to make these pronouncements about investigating Hillary Clinton put the final nail in her coffin and made sure that we had Donald Trump as president.
Yeah, well, that's without a doubt, he did that. Now, you can debate whether or not Hillary was... I know her personally, have known her since I was a kid. I think, personally, she's a very wonderful person. Whether or not she was the best candidate that the Democrats could come up with, that's up for interpretation. Obviously, she didn't beat Donald Trump.
Right.
So that goes without saying that they could have come up with someone that could have beat Donald Trump. But you have a problem in this country, and that is that we have two political parties, one is the party of no heart. And one is the party of no head. And the Democrats have no head for this.
Yeah.
They have all the heart in the world. They come up with the policies that that are progressive and, of course, protect your right to choose and your right for privacy and your right to vote. But they don't have a really good head for the fight. And that's all the Republicans have. They have no heart, but they will fight you tooth and nail to the death for leadership in this country simply so they can have the power.
The power to take away our rights, which is what it's coming down to. So, and you're so right. The Democrats, look, this, it's an old saying, but it rings true. The Democrats have this uncanny ability to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. We were so close. Look, you know.
They eat their own.
Oh, my God. The fact that at the 11th hour, literally, the Democrats picked up the two Senate seats in Georgia against all odds and got John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock in the Senate so that the Democrats now have control. It's a tied Senate, but they, with the vice president, have 51 votes ostensibly.
You can't look past the 2022 election. And, you know, your point is well taken. I mean, if the Democrats don't increase their lead in the Senate and get rid of the filibuster, we're done. If the House is lost, democracy is done.
Yes.
And we're staring at the very real possibility of that. And that's the most frightening, sobering thing to look at. Now, as far as, you know, what Merrick Garland has done, they already have started their investigation into Trump. There's a grand jury sitting right now at this moment. How do we know this? Jeffrey Clark got pulled out of his house in his underwear and thrown on the front steps of his house.
Yeah, what a shame.
So, and you have to have you have to have a search warrant. So you had to go before someone. That indicates that there is a grand jury sitting somewhere taking a look at everything that's going on in the January 6th investigation. I don't think that we will find indictments forthcoming until after the midterm because of the reason of this memo. They don't want a repeat of what happened with Comey. And so, but I would expect if you don't see indictments after, and I mean immediately after the midterm elections, then we're sunk.
I agree.
But give it to them.
I will too. And I understand the reasoning behind it. As much as I wish they had moved faster, at least it feels like there's some action going on here. But the point I was about to make is, the Democrats pulled the victory, so they have the majority. They have majorities, slim as they may be, in the Senate and the House and of the White House. We're finally going to be able to get stuff done. And then they allowed themselves to be held hostage by Manchinima. And that's it's Joe Manchin and Kristen Miss Enema, because she is an enema. So I've heard many people say, well, you know, Sinema to a lesser extent. You know what? She's as bad as he is.
They're both horrible.
I've heard arguments on both sides that Biden should have whipped out his inner LBJ. I don't know that he's so well endowed that he could do that, but he could still throw something down and say, hey, Joe Manchin, you like this infrastructure stuff? You want some of this money to go to West Virginia? Play ball with us. It seems, and he was asked, was Manchin a hard person to negotiate with? And Biden said, I don't know. I didn't negotiate with him. What?
Well, see, now you're cutting to the quick, and the dirty of it is look, Joe Biden is far, far better than Donald Trump.
Yes, okay? without a doubt.
But that is a very low bar to crawl.
It's like playing limbo. How low can you go?
I mean, you can basically crawl on your belly over this bar.
That's right.
And the Democrats have barely managed to do that. The biggest problem this administration has is its inability to communicate with the public what its intents are and what it is actually accomplished. And you could blame Ron Klain. You could blame, but at the end of the day, who's his chief of staff? Yes. But at the end of the day, you got to blame Biden.
Yeah.
He needs to be out there more often. And look, if Manchin was aware And if the people in West Virginia could put the pressure on him, if they were aware what this administration has actually done for them, I mean, the infrastructure bill alone was historic. And we have, you know, and with that one piece of legislation that was signed with about 1,000 people in attendance on the South Lawn, both Republican and Democrat, one of the biggest shows of bipartisanship I've seen in the last 40 years.
Right.
If they had just communicated that the way Donald Trump communicated, you know, his mindless rampage every, you know, just he would, if he farted funny, he'd tell us about it.
That's right.
I mean, he's going on to his supporters now talking about selling them commemorative golf balls because he got a hole in one. He spent more time talking about that than Biden has spent talking about the infrastructure. And so you give Manchin and Sinema you give them a bargaining chip they otherwise would not have if you don't communicate to the people exactly what it is that you're doing. So I blame the Biden administration for that. And I think that, you know, I try to hold everyone up to the same light, and whether you like them or not. And unfortunately, Joe Biden's administration has not been very forthcoming or very communicative or very transparent in many ways.
About anything. And then about when anything. He does do something, here's a perfect example. Last night, 11:30 p.m., I get an alert, my email from the Washington Post. And the headline reads, Biden considers declaring climate change a national emergency as soon as this week. Are you kidding me? How about Biden declares climate change a national emergency? Considers maybe something as soon as this week? What the fuck?
Hey, I'm considering edibles later this afternoon.
Right, me too. I got my after show, ready to go. What the hell?
I love you, Nicole. You know, look, let's be honest. Considering declaring it an emergency, Europe is on fire.
Yes.
Literally. We have had wildfires in the U.S. We are looking at the hottest month on the planet since people have been on the planet.
Right.
And you're considering
And that makes news? No. The news is I'm doing this. President Manchin said I won't put any money towards climate. Well, then fuck you, Manchin. I'm going to do an executive order. Boom. It's done. Not this namby-pamby bullshit. I'm considering doing something as soon as this week. What?
Well, you know, it's one of the reasons why we're in this predicament, because no one will take this seriously. And, you know, you've got at the same time that he's considering doing something, you've got Donald Trump saying, we'll have a little more coastline.
Yeah.
Never mind that everyone who's on the coastline today will be, drown. But he's looking at it as a positive. Meanwhile, there's, the planet is
burning.
Look, the planet will be fine without us.
Oh, yeah.
It'll heal.
It survived, losing the dinosaurs. It will be here.
Four ice ages at least.
Right.
The Earth will be fine.
Right.
Maybe people are just here, was the old George Carlin joke. Maybe people are here just to make plastic. You know, at the end of the day, the Earth said, I want a little plastic. I'll bring people on board and then it'll get rid of us. We're getting rid of ourselves.
Yeah.
Our willful ignorance, our inability to take action, our inability to work together, the tribalism, not just in this country, but across the planet, plus the soaring, human cost of everything that we're going through, including, the climate change and population explosion. If we don't get our, collective shit together, we're done.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm sorry, but, to me, that was the stupidest thing. I got that one at 11:30. I'm going,
right.
Well, what's he going to consider next?
Right.
Declaring, daylight good.
Me too. Exactly. I'm thinking, why is this a news alert? What? This is infuriating.
Yeah,
just clueless. And that's the problem with this administration. It's like this slow moving, not even a train, like a trolley to nowhere. It's like, do something already. And they want.
But when they do something, Nicole, they don't tell you about it. I mean, they've actually done some things that are good.
Yep.
But they don't, they allow Donald Trump all this breathing, all this oxygen to suck up. And Donald Trump will suck up all the oxygen in the room, no matter how he has to do it.
Yes.
And this administration should have been writing that infrastructure bill all the way to the midterm elections.
Right. It passed.
It did
and they
so many great things.
We hear nothing about it, except we have red state governors taking credit for the money they're now going to be spending on their states.
And we get the press blamed for not reporting on it enough. Well, I blame the administration for not telling us about it enough.
It's true. Donald Trump took patting himself on the back to a whole new art form. I mean, he would congratulate himself when he threw paper towels at the people in Puerto Rico. I got an A plus. An A plus. I did. Those towels, Playboy. They were beautiful.
Yeah. Beautiful is beautiful. Playboy, sit down. Yeah. I know.
And so this morning I did notice they had a few, you know, administration flunkies out on the morning shows. Well, you know, great. That in $5 will get you a cup of coffee today.
Well, it's a step in the right direction.
It is.
They need to be out there all the time. They need to be on the noons. They need to be in the morning shows at night. And they need to time their announcements, not 11:30 at night, but in time for prime time.
Right. And be definitive about
something.
They
could really take a lesson from Congress, which took a lesson from television and Donald Trump, and the production of the January 6th hearings has been exquisite. And I'm looking forward to the Sunday night primetime season finale.
Here's the thing, you know, the Republicans can poke fun at it or talk about it as if it's a bad thing that they're doing. Thank God they got somebody who knew how to create compelling television and tell a story to put this together and package it so that in a way that we could get the facts and understand what's going on. And they tell the story and they do it in bite-sized morsels.
Yes, they have really framed the argument well. The narrative is very strong.
It's nothing to be criticized. They did all the depositions, they taped everything so then they could pull out the extraneous crap and give us the facts we need to know. I think they've done a masterful job at it. And, I listen to them criticizing, and then I think back to what I used to call Benghazi Tourette's. How long did they run those damn Benghazi hearings over nothing? I mean, sorry, it's not nothing. Four people died. It was not worthy of how many years of hearings? And Hillary Clinton sat for 11 hours. Enough already. And they dare to criticize this, which are being done very time economically and not draining on our psyches to hear, you know, Jim Jordan running off the mouth about Benghazi.
Oh, you make a point there. The biggest mistake the Republicans made was deciding that they didn't want to be involved in these hearings.
Oh,
it really has come back to bite them in the ass.
That's
And, you know, the two, I don't know what happens in the future with Liz Cheney or Adam Kinzinger, but at some point in time, the Democrats should be very concerned if there is a Liz Cheney at the top of the ticket in the Republican side and Adam Kinzinger as her VP.
Oh, you know what?
That would be a very difficult. Now, the truth is the Republicans would never do that because it makes too much sense and they're not the people that they want. But nonetheless, that ticket would be a very scary ticket to face as a Democrat. Be very hard to beat.
Oh, I agree. And you know what? The thing is, I disagree with them ideologically about everything.
Everything.
Yes. Liz Cheney has proven that she is her father's daughter. I mean, she voted, you know, I don't know what they did today, but they're voting.
A Trump supporter.
Of course. She votes with him all the time. The only thing she's disagreeing with him on is January 6th. This is his attempt to overthrow the government. And we can't say that often enough.
And on that, she's absolutely right. If you're a fan of Stranger Things, she's Elle going after the Mind Flayer, and she's got facts on her side, and she's immune to the charms and the threats of Donald Trump. It's his worst nightmare. A very smart woman with a very focused attack against him. This is not good for him.
No.
And I know there are people who think he'll survive it, and maybe he does. But at the end of the day, she is laying waste to the Republican Party and to Donald Trump. And the credibility of many of these people will never come back.
No.
And the truth will out. And eventually, I think it's whether you like Liz Cheney's politics or not, and I don't like them.
Nor do I.
But I do respect what she's doing in this regard. She's not playing around. And, the one you have to really cheer on is this mid-20s, and I knew her briefly in the White House, Cassidy Hutchinson. Oh, my God,
she was so impressive. I didn't have that kind of pause at 25 or whatever she is. I don't have it at 62.
And what's amazing is no one's been able to step forward and refute a word that she has said. Not one word has been refuted.
Well, so let's go here, Brian Karam. So
yeah, let's go.
She says her thing. There was no reason to distrust her. She laid it all out there. Then we hear a couple of days later, well, the Secret Service is saying that never happened. The scene she described in the car, not the Suburban, not the Beast, that didn't happen, and they'll refute it.
That's poor reporting.
Right.
You know what they really said? What they said is, we will have a public statement coming forward.
Right.
And
they never did.
They never said they refuted it.
Ah.
They never brought a statement.
They never brought a statement.
Said because of what was said that they were refuting
uh-huh.
it, and they didn't do it.
Interesting. And now a Capitol Police officer or three have basically verified that they heard the same, that they know that this happened. But now we're hearing more things about the Secret Service. Today they were supposed to turn over the texts that they were able to resuscitate, and now they're saying, well, no, they can't get them. They're gone forever. That doesn't just happen. I'm sorry.
No shit.
And especially the Secret Service, U.S. intelligence, they know how to back up phones before they change over to new phones. This is complete and utter
bullshit.
Complete bullshit. This just, and now it makes me go, okay, well, so we can't trust the Secret Service.
Well, there were members of the Secret Service has had problems for a while. This isn't the first time we've had problems with members of the Secret Service. Some of them sent home from foreign trips in shame.
Because of their gallivanting with hookers and blow and shit, Hey. Hookers and blow.
You gotta have a pastime, I guess.
I guess.
I did tweet out that they're going to invest, there'll be a criminal investigation into that, and heads should roll. The Secret Service that I've dealt with over the years have been some of the most professional, especially, you know, the front guard. Now, the ones that are closer to the president, you don't get to see them as much. Those that we do see, like on the South Lawn or in, the East Room or those events or out when he's out and about, have all been very professional and treated the press very well.
Okay. Now, however, how about this Tony guy? Because Tony.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Tony.
I'm telling you, tough room with Tony.
Yeah.
You
know? Hey. I know.
However, we don't get that. We don't get that close. So we can't objectively decide, you know, the people who guard the grounds, the people who, you know, we deal with on a daily basis. I can tell you they're pretty straight up guys, but they also have a problem with some of the people that are closest to the president who, and this happens with everyone. It happens with the press. It happens with guests. It happens with members of Congress. You get close to the president and it's that allure and trapping of power that corrupts you.
Yeah, right.
And that's, you know, that's one thing that Michael Cohen warned about.
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
and because he lived it. But this Tony, it was Tony Ornato or something like that. So he was like the president, Trump's, you know, main detail guy or whatever.
He was the dude.
Then Trump promotes him to deputy chief of staff. That doesn't usually happen where a Secret Service agent crosses over to the political side. But even worse, he then went back to the Secret Service after the Trump White House ended, and he's got people under his command today.
He never left the Secret Service.
Even when he was deputy chief of staff?
That's right. He was wearing two hats.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
So, yeah, there's a bit of double dipping there and a bit of problem and some concern.
And why hasn't Biden gotten rid of him? That's what I don't get.
Well, there's a lot I don't get about this current administration, and that is way down.
Yeah, well,
I agree with you, but at the same time, there are other things about this administration that are far more concerning. And I look at the what's going on with the January 6th committee and the hearing. This is going to be their last, you know, hurrah before they break for August.
Right.
They might get, maybe we'll get in one or two other hearings if they want. I don't know if they will before the midterm. So we've got to look to Thursday night as to what is going to happen with all of this, including with Tony, you know, Orlando and Don. Yes. You know, that I think at the end of the day, if there isn't action taken, this country is done.
I think you're right. I believe you're right. We are, look, the coup that was attempted is not over. We've seen these people.
No, it's an ongoing coup.
It is an ongoing coup. And we haven't gotten a handle on it. And there are still a lot of bad actors inside this administration. That's what's so frightening. And I don't trust that this administration has a handle on it. And now I don't trust the Secret Service to think they have a handle on it.
Well, I trust the Secret Service to save the president's life. I do trust it. And I believe it was Ornato who also got in that fight. Was it him? He was the head of the detail, I believe, that got in the fight with him that Cassidy Hutchinson talked about.
But he was also the guy who tried to get Mike Pence into the car. And Mike Pence said, I'm not getting in that car.
No, I agree. So I do trust them to an extent.
Okay.
And look, Trump not going to the insurrection was a good thing.
Yeah.
For
yes.
Trump.
For all of us, frankly.
For all of us, but for Trump, and Trump didn't see it that way. But, you know, having a president ride into town in a coup is not exactly a good look for the U.S. And it was that action. There were very few people who ever put the brakes on Donald Trump. They treated him like a child. And I can tell you that from being in the White House. He would yell, scream, rant, and rave, and they would mollify him and pacify him. Congress isn't going to do that. And at the end of the day, not going to that insurrection did this country a great favor. So whatever else good old Tony did, bad or wrong, for ill or good, that was a decision that was well made. I don't know that this country survives had Donald Trump ridden up into the middle of the coup. I know it was very tough for us as reporters that day. I've told others that, you know, Nicole, I've been in a lot of conflict zones, and I felt safer when I was in Ukraine recently during a war because I knew where the enemy was. I knew the enemy was over there. I knew the people here were not the enemy, and I had a comfort zone where I could relax, you know, briefly. But that day on the U.S. Capitol, I never felt safe and had no idea who the enemy was and who would come and crack me in the head. I had friends of mine who got cold cocked in the back of the head. There were people, AP reporters, that were beaten. They came after me. The only thing that saved me, you know, I don't know, I may have told you the story. I was watching, remember those people crawling up the wall?
Yeah.
And I said, hey, morons, you dumbasses, there's stairs on either side. You don't have to crawl up the face of the wall. You're going to get your neck broken. Somebody fell and did break their neck, as I understand.
Well, oh, my God.
They got upset and stormed. There were about six or seven of them that came after me. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. And I held out my press pass.
They don't care. Playboy.
And they go, Playboy. Oh. And the one of them that was leading the charge came over to me and said, Playboy, can you get me into the mansion? Get me to the party? And I go, yeah, sure, not a problem. He goes, okay, fellas, this guy's okay. Let's go. And they went back to, you know, causing trouble with someone else.
Tits and ass.
The only thing that saved my life that day was a Playboy press pass.
Tits and ass. It'll get you everywhere.
Of those people.
Amazing.
That was a very scary day.
I'll bet.
And, I never thought I would see that on the U.S. Capitol. But I had seen so much, you know, when Donald Trump gassed protesters in Lafayette Park, I was there for that as well. And I saw that day, you know, I saw the military vehicles, the helicopters overhead, and it took me right back to the Gulf War. And I just don't, you know, Humvees, and I you never thought you'd see that type of militarization in the U.S. Capitol to provide safety and comfort. That was very scary. So this country has fallen quite a bit because of Donald Trump.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, look, I get it from my listeners too. I heard you on with Mary and the whole gang there, and it sounded like she was bordering on the "Don't you criticize the Democrats?" Well, you know,
I have a lot of people. I don't know if that's maybe, but really, there are a lot of people that are afraid to criticize the Democrats.
I know.
Because they want to be known as the good guys.
Yes, but they also think that by us criticizing, that we're all of a sudden going to swing support to the Republicans. That's not what this is about. We criticize because they're not doing the job they need to do for the American people. And that's why they're losing. And that's why the young people, the, what, 18 to 24, it's like Joe Biden's
got turned off completely 1%. By American politics.
Oh, my God. We are in deep shit if they can't get young people involved. They're the one. Look, it's their future. And they're running away in droves, not just from the Democrats, from every. I mean, I'm glad it's across the board. But the Democrats should be winning them over. And they would be if they had followed through on any of the campaign promises they made.
Well, I think the Democrats would win people over if they weren't thought of. A lot of people fear the Democrats because they come across as elitist. They come across as I know what's right. And
right.
The Republicans play on fear. They have no policies. The Republican desires to make you scared and nostalgic for the good old days that never really existed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just vote for them, they'll make that happen. That's not reality. That's insanity. The Democrats have not put their head around that and framed the argument very well that they do what's right. Or at least are trying to do
right.
That's right. They do have the concept of what they need to do. Now, whether or not they're successful, look, we can argue about whether the Democrats are successful or not, or whether they've got the right ideas. But the one idea that they do have that they should be promoting is we're for democracy.
Hello.
and look, it's that to me, the choice in this November is simple. Do you value democracy or do you value autocracy? If you value a democracy, you have to vote for the Democrats.
Right. And there's a very clear line here.
If you value fascism and autocracy, go vote Republican.
But because it's opposite world, they have those people, whether it's Matt Gaetz or Jim Jordan or Marjorie Q. Greene or whoever, saying they're all about, a dictatorship. They're about fascism. It's opposite world. They say the complete opposite of what it is. It's like, I don't watch Stranger Things. I watch one season, but they have the upside down. That's like my opposite world, right?
There you go. You're going back to Stranger Things,
right.
The upside down world.
The upside down. I call it opposite world. It's everything. Yeah. It's just
bizarro world if you're going to Superman.
Right.
And the Democrats aren't real good about, like I said, the Democrats take far too much time responding to the Republicans, and they need to take a lot more time framing the argument better themselves.
You're so right. Last night I watched, CNN has that series, I forget what the series is called, with W. Kamau Bell. That's really good. And he has a new episode that's in Arizona. We were watching it because we were probably moving to Arizona. And it's about CRT, critical race theory, that has all these stupid Republicans up in arms. And there's W. Kamau Bell says, I've been a black man my whole life. I'm as black as you come. My mother's a radical black woman. I never heard of critical race theory before this year because you all are talking about it. It's not a thing, and yet they keep coming back to it as this is dangerous. It's being taught in our schools. It's like they say that Democrats, I guess that would be me, are in favor of abortion after the baby is born.
Yeah,
Where do they come up with this shit?
Well, that you can lay at the feet of a very ignorant and very pliable press, some of that. They can spout that nonsense all they want, but when we repeat it as fact, I had never heard of critical race theory either.
Me either.
Until recently. And I'm going, oh, you mean American history? You don't want us to teach history?
Exactly. Teach history.
Don't teach history and don't teach, don't teach facts. That's what it boils down to.
That's right.
And they need to be talking about that far more. I mean, I have relatives and in-laws in rural parts of this country who talk about critical race theory. They're just spouting nonsense. These are talking points that come back to them from people in the know or from people that, from Fox News or from someplace where they've seen and heard it. They don't know what it is either.
No.
They just repeat the nonsense.
And they talk about it as if this is standard practice in every school. There's something called critical race theory that they're teaching, and it just is not true. Just like, I'm sorry, there are no babies being killed after they come out of the womb. It just doesn't happen.
No, that's not abortion. That would be, you know, murder.
Murder.
And while infanticide is a thing, it's not a legal thing. It's not endorsed by any jurisdiction in the United States.
Right.
But there are limits to abortion. There have been since abortion was made legal. And those have all stood in place and stood the test of time. And getting rid of it now is throwing this country into turmoil to the point where a woman can't even get a DNC because the doctor's afraid that she'll be, you know, he'll be prosecuted for
women it. Women who have suffered miscarriages and the fetus doesn't leave the body are being made to suffer and go into labor and push out a dead fetus. They're going to get prosecuted. Women are bleeding out. Ectopic pregnancies. An ectopic pregnancy is fatal. It's when the egg lodges in the fallopian tube,
yep,
where it can't grow to maturity. It will burst and it will kill the woman. If there's an ectopic pregnancy, these doctors can't end the pregnancy. The woman can die.
Well, let's just be blunt. The Republicans don't care.
They don't
care. They don't care about women. They don't care about anything except themselves,
right,
and the power. And they don't want to protect the baby after it's born.
No.
They simply want it to be born.
Yeah.
And the you know, the real screwy part of all that, Nicole, is at the end of the day, rich people will be able to get abortions.
Oh, without a doubt. No problem. They can hop on a plane and go to wherever they can.
In the world. It's the people that these people don't like, the poor.
Yep.
You know, African Americans, Hispanic Americans, poor white Americans, those people will end up producing more people that they don't like. So yes, they have created a greater problem for themselves.
They truly have. They truly have. You know what? I'm not going to play the video here, but just this is from the hearings last week on codifying Roe, I guess. This is a representative from South Carolina named Norman.
I'm talking about, do you agree? I know, I get that, but do you agree? I mean, do you support infanticide, killing a child after he's born?
I do not agree with the basis of that question.
What's
but
the basis?
I do believe that abortion is health care.
Okay, so I'll take that as a yes, you do agree with infanticide. Mrs. Shannon, do you agree with infanticide?
Well, I think you're using inflammatory language to basically describe a situation that does not happen. We don't have infanticide happening. Doctors would not do that, and neither would folks who have carried pregnancy.
Okay, would a healthy child, do you agree if a healthy child is born, that is that woman's right to decide if it lives or dies?
No!
What I think is, based on your question, you have a very low opinion of pregnant people. Because if you think anybody would carry...
Answer the question.
Excuse me.
Answer the question.
I'm answering it.
Do you want to answer it, or do you want to keep talking over witnesses?
What I'm telling you is nobody would carry a pregnancy and then decide on a Monday because they are bored that they want to have an abortion. That's ridiculous. And it's inflammatory, what you're saying. You're talking about families who are in tough situations where folks have been excited about carrying a pregnancy. Most of the abortions that happen later in pregnancy are really tragedies where it's really a disappointment for everyone involved.
But you agree with, I take it with all those words, you do agree with basically
all those words that he didn't understand.
But he's going to go back to, you agree with killing a baby after she's born.
Would you just yes or no?
I have to say, Congressman,
say no. And it goes on like that. It's insulting. Yeah. What you're saying is insult. Just say you're out of your fucking mind. Nobody is killing their babies. It doesn't work like that. And you keep pushing this. It's like watching that episode last night of W. Kamau Bell and this woman that he's visiting, I think, in Texas, who's insisting that they're teaching this critical race theory in the schools. No, they're not. It's not a thing. Watching
Fox. It's only a thing. It's only a thing in their head.
Exactly.
It exists independent of reality, solely within the solipsistic universe of those who believe that that things happen that don't, or that they want to have happen that they can condemn so they can do what they want. So, you know, the idea that you would kill a baby after it's born is not an abortion.
No. And according to one of those witnesses, some woman from some anti-abortion group, said, well, in the case of the 10-year-old who had to go to Indiana from Ohio, well, in that case, it's not an abortion because she needed it. And Eric Swalwell looked at her like, what did you just say? And then he called on another witness. Do you understand the term disinformation? Are you hearing disinformation here? And the other woman's like, yeah, she's talking about fairies and you know, unicorns. This doesn't happen. It's not real. Stop. But they hear this from Tucker Carlson and his ilk over on the Fox Not News channel.
Well, you just said a mouthful there, Nicole. If you're going to quote... You're going to quote Tucker Carlson. You got bigger problems.
Oh, God, no kidding.
If you're going to quote Hannity or Fox News, I would suspect that there are larger problems in your family than this.
Yeah, Fox, not news. We need to stop calling them news. They're not news.
Well, they have a news operation, and there are people that do news there. For example, Trey Yanks, who's covering the Middle East for Fox, is a very good reporter.
Okay.
But he's covering straight news.
Right.
When they're covering straight news, I have no problem with them. What I have a problem with is their opinion parading itself as news. And they do that far too frequently, but there are others that do that as well. They service this is the problem with the press. They service an audience that buys it.
Uh-huh.
And they can sell it. And it is bought and sold as a commodity. It's not news that you can use. It's information you choose. It's what you want. It's infotainment.
Right.
That's what that is.
But it's also
to be clearly labeled as what it is. But there are others, like you have, you took umbrage with Rachel earlier.
Yeah,
and there are those who would say that is opinionated.
She's
not
sometimes
based on
a
facts.
Bit hyperbolic. You know, and that's the problem. But, you know, Fox started this cottage industry where they made I made them a sounder.
Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan started this.
Yes, they did.
Ronald Reagan got rid of the fairness doctrine.
Yes, he did.
And then they broke down the rules about how many properties you could own. Today, there are twice the number of people on this planet.
That was Bill Clinton.
That
was Bill Clinton. Sorry, he was complicit too.
That was the 1996 Telecommunications Act. It was every president since Reagan has broken down the barriers and the rails that held profession in check.
Mine too.
Journalism today does not exist as it once did. That's the collaboration of big business and big government over 40 years to destroy it.
That's
like
right.
I said, twice the number of people on this planet is on the day I was born. Half the number of reporters.
Oh, yeah.
90% of what you see, read, or hear is owned by six companies. There is no way that we're getting a diversity of opinion or a diversity of news.
Nope.
We're getting what they can sell you.
Right. And, you know, I came out of music radio and I was in Los Angeles working in L.A. in 1996. And I got the warnings from AFTRA of what they're trying to do. And I'm like, oh, it's not going to be that. It can't be that bad. And sure enough, I watched this bill come to fruition. And one company used to be able to own one AM, one FM, one TV station in a market. Now they can own eight. I Heart Radio or I Hate Radio, whichever way you want to look at it. They did. They hurt radio because now they own eight radio stations in a market and two television stations and a newspaper too. It used to be you needed a diversity of owners, ideas, and opinions. Now one company can own every media outlet in a city.
That was Ben Bagdikian at the Washington Post who said, if you want to have real diversity in journalism, you have to have a diversity of ownership. And we have destroyed diversity of ownership over the preceding or the last 40 years.
Yes, we have.
So what we have today, and we were sold that bill of goods telling us that we couldn't survive as an industry unless we did. What we have done is destroy the industry. And, you know, they talk about the destruction of fast news deserts in the United States, right? There are communities that don't have newspapers.
That's right.
Well, yeah. We have destroyed newspapers, but guess what? It's been a consolidated effort if you want to look at a conspiracy, it's a consolidated effort to get rid of newspapers.
Oh, yeah.
It's not that newspapers aren't viable or valuable. It's that they have destroyed them. So you have the Alden Group, which is
bought the Miami Herald, and the Miami Herald is now a rag. It's paper thin, and there's nothing there.
There's they own 400 or 500 newspapers.
Yep.
And they shouldn't be able to do that. Nope. If we got to use the existing, and this is one of the things that get upset with the Biden administration about. I've asked them repeatedly to at least look at this issue, get a blue ribbon commission together, find ways to use existing, you know, antitrust legislation to break up the media monopoly so that we can return to normal or at least closer to normal. And we've not done it.
No. And, it, you know, I use this as radio. You can drive through, name whatever town, USA, on a weekend, and something major, a major news event can happen. You'll never know. When Michael Jackson died, it was like on a late on a Friday afternoon. And there were stations that played pop music who went the whole weekend without even acknowledging it because all those air shifts were voice tracked well in advance. And the tracks were loaded in the computers and the computer just plays them all weekend long. There was no live body in the radio station. So these stations didn't even deal with the news that Michael Jackson died until Monday. Because it's
and
all canned nonsense.
Most of those were iHeart radio stations.
Of course they were. I worked
for
them
in San Antonio. And I watched the beginning of that, and it's horrible.
It was Clear Channel. Oh, you know what? I should. Let me see. While you're here, we're in overtime anyway. Let me see if I can find this real fast. I'll play you a little bit something about Clear Channel. Just bear with me 1 second if I can.
Cloudy Channel Communications.
Oh, well, you know, I worked for them in L.A. when this all happened. We were my station that I was on the air in Los Angeles. I was on a station called it was Channel 103.1. We were two signals. We were 103.1
on your radio dial.
Yes, in Santa Monica and in Newport Beach. They had two Class C, you know, licenses, but they'd cover the coast. So we on both of them. And then when Clear Channel merged with another company called AM/FM, and they had to divest themselves of some stations in LA because they had too many. We were two stations, so they sold us. We became the first station to go seamlessly from over the air to internet only. This was back in 2000. We got the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, CNN came out and covered it live. Chicago Tribune, I've got. And then a year later, the dot-com bust happened. So we were out of business and I had no radio station in LA anymore. That's why I'm not in LA anymore. But I got to see if I can find this. Here it is. Okay, you'll enjoy this. This is for, I'm not sure which one. I think it's this one.
Welcome to the Clear Channel Collective. You have been assimilated. Resistance is futile and will result in your termination. We know what's best for radio, and you will be required to assist in the assimilation of all relevant radio stations. Now, grab that frying pan and repeat after us. We know what we're doing. We know what we're doing. We know what we're doing. We know what we're doing.
That's one of them. That's one of them. I've got a few of them. But, yeah, I wonder what this is.
All of us here at Clear Channel are working nonstop to collect every radio station on Earth so that you can hear one clear message on iHeartRadio. Now that we've redefined an anemic 0.3 to be a big ratings number, Bain Capital and management agree. We need more right-wing hacks and homogenized music on the air. It's our firmly held belief, with our dicks firmly held in our hand, that this is what the management public demands. In celebration of the Joe Goebbels playbook, Clear Channel and Premier Management would like to express their iHeartfelt perception of the American listening audience.
It's spicks and wops and niggers and kites with noses as long as your arm.
Okay,
it's mix and chin.
Okay, I'm going to cut that off because that's Britney's Boca Britney Summers, but she's got tons of them.
It's very true, though. I mean, you can go into my hometown, Louisville, Kentucky, and there are eight radio stations that are owned by iHeartRadio.
Yes. Eight.
And
yeah.
That's, you know, and radio, look, radio was and still is important. Radio was what created the news cycle that we have today. And it was, you know, when WHAS in my hometown went on the air and became part of the CBS radio network, what really set the tone for what we see, like, well, what we saw when the shuttle disaster occurred and when any large event occurs like that, it all goes back to the 1937 flood when CBS radio, WHAS, and other radio stations across the country for 2 or 3 weeks broadcast nothing but news cover to cover, 24 hours a day. And sometimes it was just updates as you can go here or go there to find, you know, food or to find, you know, a trip, or this is where the, you know, this was a huge news event. And that created the drive and the inspiration for a lot of the news and how it's covered today. And unfortunately, nothing has revolutionized the coverage of news like radio, nothing censored before. And radio remains important, as do newspapers. And look, the big thing about both of those is the live aspect of it. But more importantly, like with newspapers, I can hold up a copy of a newspaper from 1815. It says the same thing today as it said then. It hasn't been changed. It hasn't altered.
Yep.
That is finite. In a court of law, that is rules. I can go into the internet and hack and change anything at any point in time. So news is, and facts have become ephemeral. And that's one of the reasons why we have such a big problem today with disinformation, because no one knows what facts to trust.
Right.
Because they're not printed and they're not shared. And that's a huge, huge, huge problem.
Right. And you have organizations that call themselves news that just make shit up. That's what they do. Here's what I produced for Fox.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
They don't want to use it, but it's the most honest. It's more honest than anything they run.
Yeah, well, that's true. But honesty is not what's in the news today.
No, it's sad. It is a sad state of affairs. It's nice talking to somebody who understands it, because we lived through it. And seeing one company, you know, you go into a cluster, and they own 8 radio stations in one small city. It's just, you know, and it used to be you'd have a program director for each station plus air staff for each shift. Now you have one program director, usually for at least 3 or 4 of the stations, if not all of them. And most of the talent, most of the air shifts are voice tracked from out of the market. So
that's what they've done with newspapers as well.
That's,
you know,
right.
They've gotten rid of reporters and editors, and hell, there are newspapers that you don't even have copy editors. And you can tell because you read their copy and you go, holy crap.
Yeah.
You know, that's the consolidation of the news business is one of the greatest problems that is hurting, you know, our chances of achieving a viable, vibrant democracy.
Right. No, I hear you. Brian Karam, thank you so much for jumping on today. I've been bemoaning the news. There's so much bad stuff going on. So I like to have fun with it when you can. It's sometimes a bit of gallows humor because there's no way around it. but if we don't laugh, you know, the alternative is worse.
Well, if you don't laugh, you'll cry, and I'd rather laugh.
I'd rather laugh, too. I'd rather laugh, too. Brian, thank you so much. It's always great to talk with you, and it's been too long. So,
always a pleasure. Anytime.
And put in a good word with Mary Trump for me. Tell her to email me or something.
I'll pass it along.
Thank you
very much. Just get off the line here.
Awesome. Thank you. Right. We'll talk again soon. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
All right. And we're done. And with that, I will leave you with the news, because I do a newscast every morning. Actual news. So I'll leave you with the news, and I'll see you tomorrow. Okay. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting what I'm trying to do here, because if it weren't for you, we wouldn't have anything going here because of the state of this industry. And that's a shame. That's a shame. All right. Thanks for listening, you guys. I'll see you tomorrow. Here's the news. And wait, it is today's. Whew.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
In the wake of the extreme courts overturning Roe v. Wade and their other authoritarian-like decisions at the end of the term, and Clarence Thomas's pronouncement that other rights like marriage equality could be taken from us next, the House today takes up legislation to codify same-sex marriage into law. Of course, all Democrats are expected to vote for the Respect for Marriage Act. Now we hear that Republican leader Kevin McCarthy told his members that they will not be whipping the bill and would allow members to vote however they want. Very unusual for this Republican Party. No word yet on any such guidance in the Senate. Today's the day that the Secret Service is supposed to turn over a trove of text messages to the House Select Panel investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol that could lead to new insights into the former guy's activities that day. This after several days of confusion and finger-pointing surrounding the missing messages, which a government watchdog told the committee were erased by the Secret Service. Of course, the agency then denied the charge outright. DHS Inspector General Joseph Kafari, a Trump appointee, sent the committee a letter earlier in the week saying that the agency had expunged text messages from January 5th and 6th of 2021, quote, as part of a device replacement program. Huh? He also said that the erasing of the messages came after the Office of the Inspector General requested records of all electronic communications from the agency. Today was given as the deadline. Stay tuned. Fulton County, Georgia District Attorney Fannie Willis has subpoenaed Congressman Jody Heiss, also of Georgia, to testify before a special grand jury investigating possible crimes connected to the former guy's efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election results in the state of Georgia. Heiss reportedly received the subpoena last month, and on Monday he filed a motion to kill it. Willis started the investigation after Trump, in a phone call, pressured Georgia's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to find enough votes to reverse his loss in the state to President Biden. Heiss said that any discussions he had as he looked into, quote, alleged irregularities were proper in his role as a member of Congress. Yeah, right. Jury selection began Monday for the criminal contempt trial of Steve Bannon, one-time strategist for the former guy. Bannon has failed to comply with subpoenas he received last year from the House Select Committee. Bannon's lawyers said as the trial came closer, that he's now willing to testify, but on his terms. Justice Department lawyers say the trial is necessary to punish Bannon for refusing to comply earlier, not to compel his testimony now. By the way, the January 6th committee has scheduled a Thursday evening hearing intended to focus on Trump's dereliction of duty on January 6th. That's this Thursday. Now, chairman of the committee, Benny Thompson, has just tested positive for COVID. So no word if that will impact his appearance at the hearing on Thursday, but I'm guessing it would. Down here in Florida, the confessed murderer of 17 people at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland sat through the prosecution's devastating opening statement on Monday as the trial to determine the penalty for this killer began. Local prosecutor Mike Satz said that the attacker, former student whose name I will not utter, had planned to murder people at a school for a long time before he actually did it in 2018. He added that all 17 of the killings were, quote, heinous, atrocious, and cruel. The prosecutor described each killing in detail and said the killer walked over bodies, took off his vest, put down his rifle in the stairwell, and ran out after the murders, vanishing among the students and teachers as they fled. The shooter pleaded guilty. This is the penalty phase to determine whether he gets life or death, and it's expected to last at least 4 months. Meanwhile, in Buffalo, New York, the white gunman accused of killing 10 black people at a supermarket there pleaded not guilty Monday to federal hate crime charges. The suspect's federal public defender said the defense had hoped the case would be resolved short of trial. If convicted, this murderer could get the death penalty, although the Justice Department said it would decide later whether or not to seek capital punishment. The 19-year-old murderer was indicted last week on the hate crime charges and weapons counts. Investigators believe the teenager, motivated by white supremacist beliefs, drove more than 3 hours to a top supermarket in a predominantly black neighborhood, intending to kill as many black people as possible. Well, as the BA5 variant of Omicron is surging, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease specialist, said in an interview on Monday that he plans to retire by January of 2025. That coincides with the end of President Biden's first term. The 81-year-old Fauci has served as a government scientist for more than 50 years. He's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. He's also served as a top advisor on the pandemic under both the former guy and President Biden. And finally, hot enough for you out there? This heat wave that has fueled wildfires in Spain, France, and Portugal yesterday reached the United Kingdom. The temperature is expected to reach an all-time UK record of 104 degrees Fahrenheit on Tuesday. The government has declared a national emergency. British schools, sports facilities, and summer camps have all shut down. Trains were canceled. The communications director of the Grantham Research Institute on Climate Change and the Environment, Bob Ward, said the temperatures were, quote, well above anything we've ever seen before. He warned that the heat wave could result in 2,000 deaths. At least 1,100 people have already died from heat-related causes in Spain and Portugal. Spain's prime minister blaming global warming, saying climate change kills. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.